Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron, your host. And today I've got a really interesting person to talk to us about her dyslexia story and also touching on AI as well, because she bridges both worlds. I'd like to introduce you to Shilpa Rao. It's nice to have you here, Shilpa.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure being here.
So could you give the listeners a little bit of an understanding of where you are right now? I'm going to take you all the way back to the beginning of your dyslexia story, and then we'll come to where you are right now. But could you give us an idea of what sort of things do you do, your work, your business, your background?
Sure. I'm working with a very large IT services company, and I would say I'm an entrepreneur, where we are working on how we can help our Fortune 500 customers to derive new business models, leveraging various new technologies, including AI. And my current role focuses on how can technology help providing access to healthcare. And it brings together the latest research and technology together, both in the areas of, you know, the medical sciences, including genomics, microbiome, looking at physiology, looking at behavioral health, and then integrating that with AI, nanotechnology, and all the other things which are there. And this is something which I have kind of, you know, embarked on recently. But before this, I headed an AI-powered strategic intelligence platform, which was primarily focused on how companies can really leverage insights to, you know, drive their purpose. This was mainly focused for retail companies, where they could decide on things like how do they create a right mix for, you know, their customers, how they can really drive the shift. For example, having products which have artificial ingredients to kind of getting into all natural. And when you have to do that, you really need to take into account what the customer wants. And at the same time, you need to, you know, run a business. So how do you kind of leverage data to decide on the space, your mix, your price, your inventory, your entire supply chain planning, and all of that, leveraging the power of AI. And in this field, I've been a serial innovator with almost 35 plus patents in this area. And the journey, you know, right from conceptualizing it to creating a business line had been a very exciting one for me.
And did you build a business and then sell it, or were you co-foundering it with people? How did that work prior to this?
Sure. So the business is incubated within the company. So it's an intrapreneurial role. So yeah, so it's within the company and, you know, creating new businesses within the company.
Fantastic. Yes. Entrepreneurship. It's hard to hear the difference sometimes between entrepreneur and intrapreneur. And you've got dyslexia, is that right?
That's correct. So I did not know I was dyslexic while I was growing up. And somewhere it was a boon, because you're not labeled as dyslexic. But then there are things that you understand that work very differently for you. And then when, you know, when as an adult, when I kind of really figure that out, and then it was like such a relief, like, oh, now it all makes sense.
Yes. So, yeah, that was the same for me. Yeah, I didn't find out until I was 35. But we're going to get to your story in a minute. You've also got other aspects to you. For example, I read that you were Mrs. India. Is that correct?
Yeah, so in 2019, I participated in Mrs. India Worldwide. That was a fun experience. So, you know, somebody from a totally different background trying out something which was very different. So it was very interesting. And I won the sponsors award as part of that. So that was, again, a very different journey for me.
Yes, that might come up in our conversations. Any other interesting sort of facts or aspect that the listeners might find interesting to understand? Because often people with dyslexia, you know, they're not just one focus and one strand to their bow. They often have these multi-layered activities going on simultaneously or overlapping. And that's part of the nature of dyslexia, isn't it? Just this we have this ability to live in multiple worlds and bring them together to overlap and create something new. And we often live in these intersections of two or three different areas. And that's part of our nature, the ability to hold that together. Tell us a little bit more about different areas of intersection.
Absolutely. I mean, I would consider myself artist, and art, I would say, not only is about, you know, being creative in one field, but it is about being creative everywhere you go. So I see business also as an art. I see AI also as an art. And apart from that, I paint and I poetry, and I love to write personalized stories for my friends and, you know, give them as like a book for their birthdays and others. So, and very, very, like very, very, very personalized ones. So yeah, a lot of that. And I'm a mother of 9 furry kids. So
9 children?
Yeah, dogs. They're dogs.
Oh, 9 furry kids. Oh, I see. 9 dogs. Okay, got you.
Yeah, so.
What kind of dogs are they?
Most of them are Indian breed.
Okay.
They're rescue, yeah.
I see. So we've got an idea of where you are. And in your role, in such a big scope there, what do you actually do in that role, in your current role? What's the sort of your day-to-day? Are you programming? Are you managing? Give us an idea of what you do in a day.
Sure. So, I mean, like when we were starting up, obviously, I mean, like you need to kind of wear multiple hats and do all the things right from doing any small thing to actually talking to the customers and others. So now I think as you kind of evolve, the roles changes, and then you have a team and, you know, to do a lot of things. So it started with me kind of being hands-on on all of the things. And now it has evolved to a role where a lot of conceptualization and bringing together, you know, different people from different areas in research, other areas like from the software and the coding background and others. And taking the entire narrative to customers, speaking to customers and closing deals. Yeah.
Brilliant. And is it business to business, basically? You're a B2B company by the sounds of it.
Yes, yes, yes. We're primarily a B2B company, yes.
Great. Okay, so let's start with your dyslexia story. We, on Dyslexia Explored, we like to hear people's stories. And not just a snapshot, but maybe go from the beginning and just work our way through to where you are now. So
Sure. It's
kind of like, what was life like before you became aware of dyslexia? And what was your wake-up call? What woke you up to dyslexia? So what was it like before, and then what woke you up?
Sure. So when I was growing up, again, as I said, I didn't know I was dyslexic. But there were a lot of things, right? Right from the childhood, left and right is still a problem, and it kind of continues till now. And I have like these hacks which I've done. So I have this nail paint which kind of tells me this is left and this does not have one, so this is right. So so yeah. And then in the childhood, it started from like the B's and the D's and the P's and the Q's. And again, that time I had hacks where I used to kind of, you know, write on my finger saying that this is where the B goes and this is where the D goes and things like that. Reading out loud was a big challenge. And typically in our schools, we had specifically in like language classes where a teacher would kind of read a prose or like a story. And then she would randomly ask, okay, you go next. And then you have to start from where the previous student left. And it was just very, very terrifying for me. And I couldn't just read. So I used to like shiver and I was to like just freeze, like I can't read it. And yeah, that's where, you know, at some point I was like, I don't want to be in that space. And this was much, much early in the childhood. So I used to wake up early in the morning and read the entire piece. My mother was my, you know, reader before. So I used to kind of like ask her to read it a number of times. And then later I started reading it myself, like writing it down, because I realized that I was very visual. So I could like remember what I wrote down, but I couldn't read. So I would like memorize and read. So that's how I kind of got through it. And so that became my go-to place. So kind of do things before the class. And then when I'm in the class, then I know, okay, now this word, they stopped, and I could kind of, you know, go from there. Maths was again very difficult. And my math book was in fact more colorful than my drawing book. So I leveraged like colors and arts to get through the math. It was formulas. And then the way I got through math was through memorizing. So I had like solved all the problems and like what was like solved for with the teacher or with the books, and then with the page numbers. And I realized that I could, like, if I color coded it, you know, then I could like remember with the page what was like, you know, the entire thing and what was the final number, final answer to it also. So
you just use brute force memorization, yeah. And preparation to get through school.
Yes.
Wow, that is some serious dedication and determination. So what woke you up to having dyslexia then? When did you discover it?
So it was much, much late. In fact, when I was working and one of my manager kind of talked about dyslexia, and she said that probably she might have it. And then I started to explore about that. And then I like realized like, oh, now it kind of all makes sense. So
that's when... roughly how old were you, if you don't mind me asking?
Much, much later, in my 30s.
In your 30s, wow.
Yes, yes.
And so your manager mentioned it to you that you might have dyslexia.
She said she might have dyslexia.
Oh, she might have dyslexia herself.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you thought to yourself, oh, I'm a bit like her, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. And did she have dyslexia?
She didn't, I don't know. I mean, like she didn't explore much after that, but.
Okay.
Probably.
And then did you go and get some formal tests done or anything like that?
Yes. So I did a few tests online, and then I connected with the Madras Dyslexia Association, and, you know, we kind of discussed a lot of things there. And yeah, so that's how it is. And a lot of the tests, at least what we have from an India perspective, are more meant for like children. And yeah, so because the adult dyslexia is much, much different. And, you know, there are like, because with all these other different hacks you kind of get through life, the lot of things which are tested are not something which can, you know.
Yes. So you're tested on your performance rather than your inherent abilities. And you've created so many hacks that you can actually perform like typical people, but then you're actually doing so many hacks in the background to get to that
correct
natural, typical, normal, automatic performance. Yes.
Correct.
Yes. How, and do you know what? That's a real sign of high intelligence with dyslexia, because a lot of people with very high intelligence with dyslexia mask their traits of dyslexia by figuring out really clever, complicated ways of trying to create hacks. It uses a lot of brain power and energy to do it, but you get by.
Absolutely.
You know?
In fact, because I had to do all of those things, a lot of things which other kids did, I never had time to do that. So I was like prepping all the time, all my summer vacations, all my like time outside school was just prepping. And in fact, people thought that I was like a bookworm, but for that matter, I never read anything outside. I was like just reading my textbooks, and it took so much time to get through them. And people thought, oh, she's like studying so much, and she's studying so hard. And
and how did your grades go? Did you manage to get high grades, or did your grades?
Yes, yes. I was not a bad student, so I did manage to get good grades.
Right. Okay.
But it was
like a brute
strategy.
Force hack. It's like a brute force hack of a password. It's just like, I am just going to guess and guess and guess and guess and try and try and try until we break through. We break through, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Brilliant. Brilliant. It's so typical. I mean, that's just, but it takes a great deal of determination and willpower to do that. And have you watched that amazing film made in India about dyslexia, about that boy? I can't remember its name.
Yes, it's That Is Zameen Par. That Is Zameen Par.
Yes. And yes. and the translation into English, what is it again?
It means stars on earth. Or
stars on earth. Right.
Or stars on land.
Right. Yes. And what did you feel about that film?
So I did watch that film, and at that point in time, I did not relate as much because a lot of things were shown, like, you know, that letters were dancing and like they're flying off. Maybe I did not relate to it at that point in time, but yes. I understand that it's like a metaphor for it. But yeah, I mean,
yes, I really feel so sad that people are using that kind of bouncing letters myth for dyslexia. And that's one of the things that stopped me from identifying my dyslexia, because I said, well, letters don't jump up and down for me, so I can't be dyslexic. But actually, that only happens for about 3% of people with dyslexia, bouncing letters. You kind of get the impression that that's the baseline, that's the default. And if you don't have that, then you don't have dyslexia, which is nonsense.
Yeah, so I did not quite relate to it at that point in time. I mean, like, I did feel for the child, and I did, like, I did have tears in the movie. But yeah, I was like, okay, that's not me yet, right? So
yes, okay. And when you watched the movie, out of interest, did you know you had dyslexia at that point?
No, I did not.
Oh, so it's interesting. So that movie didn't help you discover your own dyslexia, because you couldn't relate to that boy's experience of dyslexia.
That's correct. That's correct.
Which was bouncing letters. Correct. Interesting. Fascinating. Now, what was it that actually made you start thinking that you had dyslexia?
So I would say one was left and right, right? So left and right took me, I mean, I'm still struggling with it, right? So things from driving to navigation to everything in life, right? So this left and right keeps bothering. Also, like a hand-eye-leg coordination. That's also something which some people get it like so easily. And I was like wondering, why does it take me so much time to get these things right? And also in terms of spellings, right? While typing or like while writing, I know I want to kind of convey the message, but it will be like full of spelling mistakes, which is okay now because you have like spell check and a lot of other things. But then sometimes you wonder like why is it happening, right? Like when you just like think back and then you see that it's not something which happens to everyone. So then you kind of start digging that, you know, some of these things could possibly look at what's really going on.
And what about some of the more subtle things with dyslexia, like following standard operating procedures, you know, standard sequence, you know, like this is the way we do it in the company. In fact, you came up with the way to do it, but you're not following the way that you came up with. Do you experience that as well?
Oh, all the time. And yeah, it's that there could be like 10 steps to do it, but like finally, like the outcome matters. So like, it doesn't matter how you get to it. So
yes, yeah. Yes, that's so classic within adults. Dyslexia is standard operating procedures. And the crazy thing is that as the boss, often you're the one who creates the process. You know, and you go, right, well, we're going to do this, 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 and this. These are the 5 steps or 7 steps that we figured out are the best. And then everyone else is meant to do it. And then you go and do it and you do step 1, 3, 7, and then 2, and you miss out 4. But you're like, yeah, we got there. Don't worry about it. And you're like, well. So what do you think your biggest challenge has been since you discovered it, or in life? What do you think your biggest challenge has been from dyslexia, and then we'll go and look at what do you think the biggest advantage has been from it.
Sure. So I feel that the way some of the other senses are leveraged, right, like as a human being, I think what I'm doing primarily, because I've kind of somewhere discovered that visual is my strength, I convert a lot of things into visual, and then, you know, it kind of helps me to get there. To the point that even music I convert to visual, so that it helps. Like now I'm learning music and, you know, the auditory does not help me as much, and then I have to kind of convert it into visual.
Give us an example of converting it to visual.
So when you have to kind of, get to a song, right? Like in terms of music, I'm kind of talking about.
Yes.
So you have your, it's Indian music. So you have like your Sarigama Padhanisa, Dore Lasa, I don't know. Like,
oh, you've got a scale.
A scale.
Okay.
And when you have to kind of sing a song, you are kind of singing those notes. And those notes, rather than listening, I visualize them on the piano, and then I know those notes. So,
all right. So you visualize, oh, I'm playing that key, and then that
correct.
Key beside that black one, and then that one a bit further
correct.
Along.
Correct.
So you're not singing what you're remembering by ear, you're singing what you remember by seeing.
Seeing.
Yes, fascinating. And you mentioned also that you're converting this into visual other things in workplace. Let's take a
correct.
When do you convert something into something visual, and how do you do that? And give us an example in work.
Yeah. So in fact, my colleagues would like, you know, I'm always like with a marker, and I'm writing everywhere. So
on the whiteboard, on the windows.
On the whiteboard, on the glass panel. I see any surface, I'll write on, draw on it.
Brilliant. And do you have lots of post-its as well? Do you stick post-its around the place when you're doing brainstorming, or?
Not so much post-it, but like, you know, like post-it, just write it, right? Like,
okay.
Box them up.
A little box here and
Yeah, box here and box there, and like write them down. And it also helps to explain, because there are so many things that you kind of are out of words, and then you just draw it and it becomes easier to explain. And the person also gets it, what you're trying to kind of convey, because it's already in your head and then you're not able to convey, and then just drawing it helps. So
yes,
that, and like, yeah, it will be like a whole map there.
Yes. Yes. Do you mind map? Do you do any mind mapping?
Yes. So, I mean, I would not say, again, it would not be like a traditional mind map process, but it would be different blocks and, you know, how they're connected and others. So it probably wouldn't look like a mind map tool, how it would kind of do it. But yeah, but something on similar lines.
Yeah. So what I find fascinating observing people with dyslexia do mind mapping compared to typical people doing mind mapping, I think of it as thinking from the outside in or from the inside out. And I notice that people with dyslexia like us, I've got dyslexia, think from the outside in. And other people think from the inside out. So when it comes to a mind map, you put a central image in the middle and you say, we're going to talk about such and such, and here are the five main things that we're going to talk about. And then we break it down, and they're breaking it down from the inside out, really nicely structured. And they end up with a beautiful mind map that is so well structured. But if you get a person with dyslexia to do that, they're like some random central point, some trivial detail around the edges, and all the important stuff is around the sides, and it's all higgledy-piggledy, and they look at it and they go, oh, I don't like the look of that, because that just represents what's going on inside my brain. But if they go, right, I'm going to write a cloud of ideas around the edges, and then we're going to start pulling in some of those ideas towards the center, and they start working from the outside in, then they're like, oh, I love this. You know, so I think there's outside in thinkers and inside out, and you sound like a very outside in.
Yeah. In fact, I have one here. I don't know if you want to see it.
Yeah, please, let's see it.
Okay, I don't know if you can see it or not, but...
Yes. Okay, so I can just picture this. You're in a meeting and you're scribbling around. So I can just picture you writing all that, all those things, and translating it in the middle of a meeting and then after the meeting. So, so typical. It's great. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. So, in a way, you've talked a little bit about the challenges. Well, another thing that you mentioned to me earlier before the podcast is you've noticed that you've started to talk about your dyslexia story. You know, you're quite well known in India, aren't you?
Okay, I mean, like...
Well, in a way, you know, you've done Mrs. India, and quite a few people know you, but you've decided to come out and tell people your dyslexia story much more openly. You've coming on this podcast, you've gone on other news in India and so on. And can you tell us a bit about why you're doing that?
Sure. So see what happens is that when people discover, or especially now when kids discover that they have dyslexia, it leads to a lot of things that they go through, both from a social perspective and their own struggles. And what I've seen is that with that, they lose confidence. They lose who they are as they kind of go through the way. And when someone hears a story of a fellow dyslexic and how they have navigated some of these challenges, they feel more confident about their lives, right? And it helps them to navigate some of these challenges. And that's where I decided to kind of share my story so that it helps others to gain that confidence and see dyslexia more as a strength than something that impedes them through their life.
Thank you. And what strengths do you think that you've kind of picked up over the years as a result of maybe the challenges of dyslexia, or as a result of inbuilt kind of different ways of thinking?
Absolutely. So I would say one is perseverance, because, you know, throughout life, you have kind of failed so many times because you have tried a strategy and it did not work. And then you have tried it again. And then you have, like, it did not work again. And then you have failed again. And then you have tried again. So that essentially builds that perseverance and resilience in you to kind of do more things. And that also helped me to, you know, look at everything as an experiment, like, okay, let's try it out and let's figure things out. So that helped me when you're kind of trying to do new things, solving problems, or just innovating. So that brings that inherent rigor to keep on trying and not giving up, and use different strategies, sometimes use brute force or something else, or maybe a smart hack to kind of, you know, navigate through the problem to solve it, because that's what, you know, helps in going through life. So I think that's one of the key one. The other one is, as I said, like visualization. So, you know, visualizing both in 3D and 2D, and just being able to see what it would look like, really creates that vision for the future very more vivid. So you can actually see things, and you know, you can describe them, you can communicate to them, and maybe the communication might not be verbal, you can draw them and communicate, but you're able to see it, literally see it. And the third part I would say is taking like some random points, like three random points, and stitching them together. So just like, you know, take different things and then you can weave them together in a story or bring them all together. So I think I would also see that as a strength.
Fantastic. And so coming up to where we are now, you've been in the world of AI for how many years now?
19 years.
No way, that long?
Yes.
in data science and AI?
Yes. I mean, it was not even called, I mean, it was called AI, but it was like not so popular as AI. But yeah, I, in fact, majored in AI in my engineering. So,
fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I feel that AI is going to solve the challenges of dyslexia and amplify the advantages if we find the right tools for it. I think it's going to, and I want to sort of talk this through with you. You know, I think there'll come a time when AI and learning to read in the early years, AI will have learned all the various different techniques of reading that exist, that both the multisensory ones, the Orton-Gillingham ones, the typical ones that are used in school, and if one doesn't work, they'll use other techniques, etc. And when it comes to learning to write an essay and the difficulties we have with learning to write essays, again, structures and scaffolding and guidance, you know, just so many things, you know, learning to drive, learning right and left techniques and tips, and, you know, all of these kind of procedural, because so much of dyslexia is about processing. It's about how, it's a processing difference. We process phonologically differently. We process information differently. We process processes differently, which is why we find it so hard to follow a standard operating process, because we're always improvising, because we can't always remember it, or it's not broken down small enough to work with what we need, etc. Whereas AI is all about processes and intuiting what would be the next step, what would be the next process. And so it becomes this sort of companion for people who are out of the box, outside in thinkers. You've got this inside out thinker that is like, well, this is a standard process for doing X, Y, and Z. This is what's next predicted. So I just wanted to kind of open the floor with that and hear what you had to say with regard to AI and dyslexia.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I would start from just simple technology, right? Like when I was growing up, we did not have Word. Maybe we didn't have Microsoft Word in schools. But just getting to spell check was a game changer, right? So where you had these wiggly lines, and then, you know, yeah, still it was still difficult because figuring out between those, you know, different options it gave. But much better than, like, you know, remembering all those words and, like, figuring that out. So I think technology always helps to get to a level playing field for many. In fact, like, the technologies which exist today itself help in a lot of level playing field, right? So, like, just the maps. The maps have, like, the actual direction, so you don't have to, you know,
you've got your blue line,
right? Yeah,
you've got your blue line. Yeah, I get in the car with my wife, and I've got a good sense of direction, but I get lost in the car because I'm talking away and I'm not concentrating on what direction. So we just get in the car and we go, have we got a blue line? We go, yeah, we got a blue line. Right, we're fine. You know, I won't go over any random bridges by accident. But yes, a blue line.
Yeah, so that kind of really helps. And then you have readers, which can, you know, help you read. And now with generative AI, essays are already written for you. So, and a lot of things are already done for you. And in fact, the images are also generated for you. So a lot of it, if used in the right way, a lot of things are already available which can help navigate through life in a much easier way. And yeah, I think leveraging what works for individual, because I think every individual is unique, because I have friends who also are dyslexic and they process in a much different way than I would process some things. So, and then every dyslexic is also very different. So what works for that person, I think technology can really help to do that. And AI is just taking it to the next level, not just for dyslexics, but for everyone. So
for everyone, yes.
For
yes.
Everyone. So it actually brings everyone on a level playing field. And I feel somewhere dyslexic have an extra edge because now, like as you already said, like all the processes are taken care of. Now you can actually apply on the creativity, which kind of brings in that new thought process or brings in things which are not existing in the world, which AI cannot, you know, bring out. So I feel that gives dyslexia a real advantage.
Yeah. Where do you think things are going in the future in terms of tools that will be, I mean, we've talked about already things that will help. Where do you think things are going to go and what will it look like in the future for people with dyslexia in the workplace or in school?
I would say that, again, technology is going to give everyone a level playing field. So it's not going to be where, I would say that having things done and called special might not be required, right? Where you're not doing any special considerations or, you know, concessions for anyone, because it's for all. It's not, you don't have to call out a specific group or, you know, a specific ability or a disability outside. So because it's designed for all, it's accessible for all. I think that's the future. And also working on strengths. I think every individual have their strengths. So working on their strengths and honing them and building them further is what technology is going to help to do. So that's where I see the future, where everybody has a level playing field and it's equitable for everyone.
So how do you use AI in your current work? You know, what's your... Can you give us some insights into how you're using AI right now and maybe a little bit about your way of thinking as out of the box thinking and inside your work using AI as well? Could you give us some examples of how that interrelationship of your mind and the tool of the mind of AI, as it were, the neural network of AI, and how you're implementing it?
Sure. So just like go from where we started and then how we kind of got here. So it was interesting on how we started in terms of, this was one of my first assignment and it was in UK. And it was a way back then, before a lot of things today are available. So I used to spend a lot of time waiting for a bus at a grocery store somewhere in the northern part of UK. And
where was it in the UK, out of interest?
This was in Cheshire.
In Cheshire. I'm in Edinburgh.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So this was like a small town in Cheshire. And that point in time, it did not have a lot of people. So coming from India, and I was brought up in Mumbai, where, you know, there are just people everywhere, right? And I used to kind of not see people every day. And it was like, it was, there not even enough people on the road. Like you could see like just one or two people on the road. And it was like shocking for me, because, you know, it's a completely different environment. And it was not London, where you would see like, you know, it's crowded. It was like a village where I was kind of staying. And there was just like two shops. There was like one grocery store and one bakery shop and one post office. So these were the three ones. And I'm staying from like where I was working. There was like some distance I was staying. And I used to take the bus. I didn't drive that time. And I used to spend a lot of time in the grocery store waiting for the bus, because it was very cold. And that was the best place to just be warm. So there I spent a lot of time like just observing what are the items in the store. Because if you look at a grocery store in India versus in UK, it is very different in terms of like the items which are kept there, in terms of, you know, just the mix which is there. It's very, very different. And at that point in time, this was before YouTube, I mean, like, was popular, and before Google was like much popular, where you couldn't find like, what do I eat? Or how do I kind of, you know, really figure out what do I eat? So I used to spend just looking that what should I have for dinner. And there was a section on ready meal, where you have these ready to eat meals, and then you just pull them out and then microwave them. And I used to kind of, you know, stand there and see them for a long time. And there was this store associate who used to often just take them off and then put them in like this trash bin. And I used to ask, coming from a family where we had to finish everything on the plate and not even leave like the spices that you put in the food, it was very criminal for me to see somebody just like throwing boxes and boxes of ready meals into the trash can. And I asked him like why he was doing that, and he said that, you know, the way they order it and how much they need to keep on the shelf so that the store does not look that it is going out of business, and then it has its shelf life and, you know, all of those things. So that kind of gave me an idea like, oh, this is something that needs to be, you know, solved, and this needs to be solved at that store level. So that's where the journey started. And when I came back, created like a small model on how that could be solved. And then we pitched it to a lot of clients, like almost like we had a lot of clients coming to our office and we pitched to them. And then finally we got a breakthrough where we could actually go and implement that. So that's how the journey started. And when you kind of look at from a retail perspective, there are a lot of factors that you need to take into account when you have to decide what is the mix that you need to keep in the store. How do you have to price it? What space you need to give? Because like you have, say, a 30,000 square feet store and you have like a million items that you could keep in. So how do you decide on what needs to be there? And you need to take into account who your customer is for that particular store, and what, you know, what kind of background they come from, like, you know, what are their preferences that from choices perspective, and how do they make decisions, like what is their decision tree, how do they look at, are they like very brand sensitive or they are very functional, like, you know, what function that particular item does it. And then, you know, it takes into account like so many different factors that you need to then take all of them and then balance it out and then create something which is very specific for that particular store so that you keep it, so that when the customer comes, the customer gets it, it satisfies what they are looking for. And at the same time, it's profitable for the business also. So balancing all of that leverages, you know, requires AI to, you know, go that granular, considering a million of items, considering all these different factors. And that's where we leverage AI to head them out. Now, go ahead.
So when you go into the shop and yes. You speak to the assistant and you say, oh, why are there none of these or none of that? And they kind of go, well, you know, the head office decides and we just get a delivery and we just put it out on the shelves. We don't have anything to do with it. That's right. Because people like you have set up systems that are making those decisions at a big level and down to the very detail of what item gets bought and put onto the shelf and how many of them. And it's another aspect of that, reducing waste so that you've got enough for when people want it, but not so much it doesn't get wasted.
That's correct. That's correct. And ensuring that you have enough variety within, you know, everything. So like, for example, if you like look at diced tomatoes, they come in, you know, in different forms. Like you have like the ones which are like, they're sliced and diced, and then they're slices, they're diced, and there's a puree, and then there are, the skin is removed, and you know, there are various forms of that. So, and they come in different sizes, they come off different brands, and there's like a whole bunch of, you know, variety in them. And then what needs, and you have like, say, for example, for canned tomatoes, you have like only 4 feet. So what is the best that you can keep in there based on what the population in that store actually shops for and what they're looking for and what they're making from the recipe and others. So, and then that goes online also. Sorry, go ahead.
So looking at it from a dyslexia perspective and from the out-of-the-box thinking type, pulling together various different disciplines kind of default that is often the dyslexic mind, you've gone into a shop, observed something happening there, and then translated that into, we need to find a solution that uses AI. And you did that like over 15 years ago, something like that. You were doing that. Wow, that's incredible. And did you program it, or did you come up with the concept and someone else program it? How did that work?
Sure. So I actually drew it on how all the different pieces would kind of come together. And then, yes, I did have support from various scientists, because at that point in time, a lot of these things were not solved. And the algorithms of considering a lot of these things were also not solved. So it required researchers and scientists to actually work together to actually solve this problem. So when you have to kind of consider so many different factors in you know, what you call, this is like an NP-hard problem, there's like no easy space, like a solution space for it. So you really require the research which was ongoing at that point in time to solve this. So getting all of them together and solving that problem, and then building the team on that, and then taking it to market and pitching it to clients. So all of that.
And that's the expression of that big picture thinking, and that's finding all the connections. You're connecting the component parts of the system in that big diagram. You're then connecting different technologies. Then you're making sure that there's people who are connecting those technologies. And then you're identifying the gaps and getting people to fill in those gaps with new technologies. And then you're connecting it with people who need that problem solved, customers.
Correct.
So is that where the patents come in as well? Did you start getting some patents through that process?
Yes. So patents were more from working with the researchers to actually solve that problem, because there is a combination that we need to solve, right? So, and sometimes the answer does not lie in that domain and perhaps lie somewhere else. So solving that together, that's where the patents came from.
And do you find that you have this desire to explore different associated domains that other people are maybe more blinkered to? Could you talk to that a little bit? And because often when you think like the way you clearly think, and other people with dyslexia often think, you just think, well, doesn't everyone just think like this? You know, isn't this just normal?
Absolutely. Oh my God, you read my mind. Right. And it's only when you kind of start explaining to people that this is how you think, and you kind of draw it to them, and they say like, oh, is it? Right. And they said, no, this is not the case, because if you see it only in this way, then all of this does not make sense. But then you know that it's all connected, and you can see those connections much before anybody else could see it. So, yes.
I sometimes think it's a bit like, you know how people see what's in front of them, what they're working on, and they've got kind of like other associated disciplines that are kind of like in their periphery vision, they're kind of blurry, and they know they're there, but it's just kind of in their periphery vision. But then if you stepped back another 50 feet back, those things that are in the periphery vision would be in your center vision, and you would see a whole lot more. It seems that sometimes people with dyslexia are like, just, they're not seeing it in the periphery. They're just seeing it all equally connected. And sometimes that's part of the problem. Children with dyslexia in school experience this in the form of, oh, there's all this information, I'm not quite sure what's important. Everything feels important. Whereas the teacher's like, no, we're not trying to solve the universe and everything. We're just trying to write this little story with two paragraphs with two characters in it. But you're like, no, there's dragons over here, and there's a big mountain over there, and there's all these other things that could be happening. And the teacher's like, no, we need to focus on this bit here, you know? And
true,
it,
absolutely.
The same translates into the workspace. But what sounds like is you've mastered that. You've moved into that realm where you can express that ability to cross disciplines.
Absolutely. And I could completely relate to what you're saying, because it is still difficult to prioritize. And it becomes overwhelming at times, because like, oh my God, there are like so many things to do. But I think it's, sometimes it takes a little more time, but I think it's worth it. to, you know, go through it, and having like a list and saying that these are the first things that needs to be done and these are the second things needs to be done. And sometimes, you know, setting out a little more time for doing other things too can help you to bring it all together. So while I do have a list of things to do, like that's how I manage things, but I don't go back to that list very often.
You forget to look at your list. And do you sometimes forget to look at your calendar even as well? I coach some people with dyslexia in the workplace strategy coaching for dyslexia. And they come to the coaching sessions and they have like secrets that they tell me, and they go, I don't look at my diary sometimes for like days. And I'm like, I know you don't need to confess that to me. That's just default. And you know, how do I remember to look at my diary? Right. Well, you need to set a reminder on your reminders to remind you to look at your diary to figure out what's happening in that day, you know? And, you know, these kind of little convoluted ways of ending up doing what you're meant to be doing. So are you kind of like that as well?
Yeah. But then directionally, you know that this is where you're going, and then you create events which keep you in check. So
yes. So there's some accountability, you know.
Yes.
Yes. I'm meeting such and such in correct. 1 week's time. There's a deadline. I better get that done. Yes. I think that sometimes part of the advantage and the coping strategy with dyslexia is to work socially with people. You know, like I wonder if sometimes if you isolate yourself and work on something on your own, you're not necessarily getting the feedback you need to, you know, there's something quite social about dyslexia. I noticed this in school, for example. Children will be walking along the corridor and they'll go, oh, where are we going next? Because they can't remember what subject they're doing, you know. And they've been doing the same timetable for like 6 months, and everyone knows, oh, we're going to maths now. And you with dyslexia are kind of going, oh, I wonder what's next. Oh, we're doing maths. Oh, yeah, we're doing maths. But if you didn't have your pals with you, you wouldn't be going there. Do you know what I mean?
In fact, that was my strategy. I mean, like, you just see where everyone's going and just follow that. I mean, like, you don't have to remember where you have to go.
That's right. And can you imagine how hard it is? When you've got virtual classrooms now on Zoom and so on, you don't have your friends all piling into Zoom saying, now it's the class. You're kind of like, oh, gosh, I've missed it, you know? So you've got all of these cues, these visual external cues that are sort of that you're responding to and you correct. Use as kind of like a unconscious coping strategy.
Absolutely, absolutely. So one of my coping strategy was to write down everything. So even if I'm not looking at it, but just write it down, because then it kind of registers visually. So I remember that this is what has been said, or this is what needs to be done. It's visually there. So while I was able to go back to that. So that sometimes it's good, but sometimes it also creates problem, because like we are talking and then I'm like writing it down. So it hinders communication. And sometimes people say, hey, no, don't write it down. Like just listen, just talk to me.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but I have to write it down for me to kind of remember it and recollect what you said, because I won't recollect what you said at all. So, yeah, that had been challenged. But I think over time, you kind of figure out something else. I don't know what I did, but I'm over it, I guess, now. Similarly, as I was saying, like in school, I had to kind of prep everything up before the classes, and some of that kind of continued in college too. And then the reasons I chose my college, like both my B school and my engineering, was to have it in like a kilometer radius, so that I don't spend time commuting, but I get all that, and then I don't get tired because it's like quite nearby, and then I could spend that time in the prep. And then when I, you know, joined my company, it was a completely different ballgame because one, I was posted in a completely different city, and then figuring out like how to just live to, you know, getting to work. It was like a completely new set of challenges. So yeah, I completely get what you're kind of saying in terms of coping strategy. And sometimes like once something is like picked out, then you need to find out another strategy to cope with all the things which are going on.
Yes. I had a funny, a guest on who's a dentist, and there was a girl who really liked him. Okay. And she figured out that he could not work out what lesson to go to when. Okay. And so she memorized his timetable. Okay. So that he would go, oh, right, God, watch that. And she would be there saying, oh, you're going to maths now. And that was her way of connecting with him, because she realized that he had no idea where he was going next. So you were just, you were talking about how with that AI, you were connecting lots of pieces of technology, lots of people, and also the product with customers. There's this connecting process. And that's one of the sort of great abilities that you've got, obviously, there. Let's sort of reflect back on how the dyslexic mind was contributing to that, you know, because we've seen it in terms of connection. But were there things that you saw that other people didn't see? What do you think your mind and your way of thinking brought to the table that was maybe different than others?
So one, I was saying that I could actually see it before anything else. So I could see how it would look like. I could see how it could solve things. So there was this whole visual representation of everything, right? Be it how the data would be organized, or be it how the logic would work, or be it how, you know, it would look like at the end product would look like. So there was always that visual, which I could actually draw on the board, or I could, you know, like draw and say that this is what it's going to be, this is what it's going to be. So it was easy to communicate, and there was a direction. I would say that was one thing which helped. Second thing I would say that you need to kind of talk about it to a lot and lot of people, right? And there would be a lot of times when people would say, oh, that would not work out, or, you know, would not kind of be encouraging at some point in time. But you have gone through so much in life where you have kind of seen that as like, you know, everyday thing.
Yes.
And you say, yeah, that's like, that's
regular. That's normal. That's normal. Yeah. Okay, I got you. And that's where that perseverance and resilience comes in.
Correct. So even if you have to do it 100 times, you would do it 100 times because you know that there is, you see what others cannot see, and you know that it's okay. Like even if people say, and it's important to take feedback and change course and all of that, but you stick with it, right? So I think that really helped through seeing through it, right? Otherwise, you would, like, if it did not work 2-3 times, then you would kind of give up and not really think about how do you kind of make it work.
Yes, because in school, it's kind of like there's this default understand and expectation that there is a right way to do something, and someone's going to teach me the right way to do something, and I'm going to learn that right way. I'm going to do it 2 or 3 times, or I'm going to do it 5 or 10 times, and then I know the way to get to the right answer, you know? And there's that kind of default expectation that there's a problem, someone's given me the solution, I'm going to follow that solution and learn that solution and do it. And then you get into business and you're kind of like, right, here is the problem. This is what people do to solve this. Oh, I've tried it. It didn't work. Oh, well, it must be that it's not right, you know, or it's not doable. Whereas you just keep going, because that's the default you've been used to at school and in life.
Because you had tried to figure out so many things because you knew that that did not work for you. So you had to do something else, and that something else also did not come like easy. So it took time to kind of figure it out. Oh, maybe this is easy and this works. So, and sometimes you try to find the easy way out for you. And while it feels easy for you, it might not be the easiest way for everyone else, right? Like, so like this brute force, people might find it like so difficult for somebody else, but that was the easiest way I could do it. So
just repeat it, repeat, yeah. repeat, repeat. We keep practicing until you've learned.
More than practicing, like visually, like, you know, write it down, color it, see it visually, and
So. Well, it kind of seems so labor intensive, you know, that you're like, why are you spending so much time doing this, that, and the next thing? Why don't you just go and do this and that's it? And it's funny, isn't it? Because, and sometimes, I don't know how you feel, but sometimes you can get a bit embarrassed because you're like, yeah, I know, I'm sorry, I'm taking like 5 steps to do what you do in 1 step. But yeah. I can't get that 1 step unless I do this. I'm old enough to know better and young enough to do something about it. So I'm just going to do this. And I think it's fascinating, this visual thinking side of things, because if you look at an MRI scan of a person with dyslexia, have you seen these MRI scans of people with dyslexia?
No, I haven't reading? Specifically. No.
So I think it was, I'm not sure, Dr. Sally Shaywitz did this, I think. And I think it was 2012. What they did was they took 200 people, 100 with dyslexia and 100 with typical minds, and they got them to read inside of an MRI scanner. And they looked at the scan of their brain to see which parts of their brain were lighting up. And they compared the two. Okay. And what they saw was absolutely fascinating. You could actually see dyslexia in action, you know? And so for a lot of the activities where it was typical words that they already knew, the brains lit up the same, okay? But when they gave them made up words, okay, that sound like they should be words, but they've not memorized before, okay? Their brains lit up differently. So the typical readers use the two main areas of the brain, one on the left side of the brain here, and then one at the back. And they were using those two parts to decode the word and say the word out. But with the dyslexia, the one on the left and the one in the back was about 50% lit up compared to the others. But then in the middle, on the right-hand side here, the creative side, it lit up to compensate. So you can literally see on the MRI scanner, oh, I can't figure this out with my normal decoding side. So I'll send it over to the visual side, start to visualize it and translate it into something visual, like key C, curly cut is for cave. And it looks like a cave and it sounds like a cave. And I don't know, you're making sounds. Okay, that's the curse sound. And then we'll take it back to the normal processing area. And you're doing this backwards and forwards to the creative part. You can actually see it on the MRI scan.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Amazing and really fascinating, right? So what you're experiencing every day, you can actually see it. And yeah.
And so you're translating into something visual, like I cannot remember my PIN number, like 4 numerical digits. I cannot remember them. So I have to convert the letter, the number, number 4. I'm not going to give away my PIN number. Well, yeah. So the number 4, I use the major mnemonic system. Number 4 becomes a L, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. And then let's say it's 4, 5. The 5 becomes a L. It's always L. And so you do R, L, and you go rail, like a train rail. I imagine a rail. Okay, I've got a rail. And then there's a train on it. So T and N, you know, train or no, that wouldn't be right. Tire, T-I-R, tire. Okay, so T and R, T is 1 and R is 4. So if I've got a rail with a tire sticking on it, one massive tire going down it, and I've got that stuck in my imagination on my PIN card. Okay, I go, right, what's the PIN number of this card? Oh, that there's a rail and there's a tire. So R is 4, L is 5, 4, 5, and then tire, T is 1, and then R is 4, so it's 1, 4. So that's a practical example of converting, you know, a number that someone's just automatically remembered. Yeah, it's, you know, 4, 5, 1, 4, you know, and you're like, yeah, how hard is 4, 5, 1, 4? And you're like, no, rail, tire, I've got it. You know? So that's an example of taking what is just normal, typical processing and having to convert it into something visual and bring it back down. And you seem to be doing that all the time.
Yes.
So I often ask what advice guests would give to parents, but you're not a parent, are you? You've not got yet. No. So what advice would you give to, let's say, young people who want to be entrepreneurs like you, maybe even in India? Maybe there's something context specific to India, or maybe it's general. But what kind of advice would you give to young people or other people who maybe even think, let's start with young people and then let's move to other 30 somethings who might be wondering if they've got dyslexia?
So I would say that one is just believe in yourself. I mean, there are a lot of things that you can do differently. There are a lot of strengths that you could leverage. So instead of focusing on the things which are difficult or things which you can't do, always there is technology to kind of, you know, aid that. But focus on the strengths, because those are some things which are unique to you, which you might not even realize that they are unique, but they are. And just believe in yourself, and with focus and action, anything is possible. So,
and to a 30-something-year-old who's maybe thinking that they might have dyslexia because their boss has mentioned it, like you, what advice would you give to them? Is it worth, because some people think, is it worth me finding out if I'm dyslexic as an adult? I can read, I'm out of school, it's not relevant anymore, is it?
So I would say that, see, labeling dyslexia obviously kind of brings a lot of challenges with it, right? So as a child, right? Because when you say a person is dyslexic, typically people bucket you into something where they would say, for example, you might have like 4 things which are not working for you, but then if you label them as dyslexia, they would be like 30 things which could be, you know, not working for you, not working in that area. And then you would say that I have all of them, instead of just like the 4 and just focusing on that 4. But when you are an adult, you already have figured a lot of things out. And sometimes just knowing that there is a condition because of which it just kind of, like you get like that, aha, oh, now it makes sense, right? And it also gives a feeling of like a belonging to an extent, because now you know that it's okay and it's a relief, right? And also it helps you to kind of look at what you're doing currently and see if there are better ways of doing it. Because what happens is that a lot of the coping strategies then become very, very innate to you, that you don't realize that you're even doing that. And sometimes you think that's the only way to kind of get through it, but there could be better ways. So that could essentially make you, you know, probably more efficient or more productive in some of the cases. And there could be also ways in which you could get help to navigate through some of those challenges, which you have, you know, build a way, like, you know, a complicated maze to kind of go through it. So I would say that is the benefit of just, you know, understanding as an adult that there could be a condition that way. And also like working on the strengths, right? So because we are so focused on working and coping through all the day-to-day things of lives that you don't really focus on the strength and don't see that as a strength and don't see that that is something that is very unique to you. So that also helps to understand your strengths better.
Fantastic. Any final things you'd like to share with people and interest and stories or anything you've been thinking about that you wanted to share? Or are there stories that you've shared with other people about dyslexia that they've found really helpful or useful?
Yeah, nothing's coming on top of my mind right now. But yeah, I would say just be yourself. And I know it's like harder said than done, harder done than said, sorry.
But, well, it's both the same, harder said than done, yes.
So just believe in yourself. There are better ways of doing things. So experiment and don't be shy of experimenting and finding out ways in which you could contribute to your own growth and to others' growth. So.
Yes. I think sometimes that experimenting thing is quite an interesting word because sometimes we are taught a set of skills in school and in work that are like, well, this is the way you do presentations. This is the way you do this kind of work. This is the way you organize yourself. This is the way you do calendars. This is the way you take notes. This is, and there's all sorts of different ways of doing things, you know? But there, I kind of think sometimes it's like our minds are like feet in that our feet are different sizes. Yeah. And we take a lot of care making sure the shoes on our feet are the right shape for our feet. Because if we don't, our feet will really hurt and we will be disabled very quickly by blisters and cuts and all sorts. And our minds are different shapes as well. And the tools we use around our mind are different. But if we fit one set of shoe to our mind, one set of tools, and we think, oh, that doesn't work, and I'm trying really hard and it's not working, then experiment and find something, a different shape that fits your mind.
Absolutely.
That's experimentation is the key, isn't it? It's just that experimenting, oh, that works. I don't know why that works, but basically you've realized, oh, I need wider shoes or longer shoes or a higher, you know, there's something about that shoe make that fits your feet.
Absolutely.
What sort of tools do you find you use a lot, by the way? What sort of tools and techniques are you? Do you use a paper notebook or are you so high tech that since you're in the AI industry that you everything's digital? How does that all work for you? What are your go-tos? You've talked about the whiteboard and your pens. What other tools are you using all the time?
Interesting. Everything else is digital. On my phone, ChatGPT. I mean, that's like now the go-to one. And
ChatGPT, do you use the audio speaking to her? Speaking to ChatGPT thing that where you hold it down, you
not
talk and
so
then it
much.
Talks it back.
Yeah, so not so much because typically I'm in an environment where, you know, you don't want to talk to the phone.
Okay.
You want to text more than talk. So I use the text, but I think cleverer prompts which can help you get those things in like 3-4 lines. So that you can use that to research, you can use that to read a lot of things and get the gist out of it in a very, very short and crisp way. So
are you using Perplexity yet?
Yes, I am using Perplexity also, but somewhere I still find ChatGPT better.
So you're using AI, you're using your whiteboard. Do you use the digital calendar a lot?
So it's the office calendar, like the Teams calendar, which I kind of leverage. I use that to set events, right? Like, so to set a meeting and, you know, commitment piece. So that's primarily through calendar. And then I do use Google Keep for notes and ideas and, you know, a lot of those things. So yeah, I think those are the primary ones, I would say, on top of my head.
Well, it has been fantastic speaking with you, Shilpa. Thank you very much.
Lovely speaking with you, too. It was a beautiful conversation and I discovered so many things about myself, too. So thank you for probing and, you know, yeah. going down deeper. So thank you, and hope this conversation helps someone.
Yes, I hope it does. And we'll broadcast it to India. We've got lots of people in America and the UK and Sydney, Australia, and so on. But we do have a number of Indian listeners as well. So it's going to be nice to sort of have that sort of representation there as well. So it's great. So until next time, see you later.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And to you. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.